This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Are you disappointed that Trey Smith, the best offensive lineman on the free agent market, won't make it to free agency? Chiefs putting that tag on Smith, does that radically change your offseason hopes? What is the Bears' plan B, and how about your plan B?
Yeah, I'm glad it's not my job. I don't know that there are a ton of really good options, frankly. There are definitely players. There are guys. You hear different things. I would imagine that just because one of the better guards in the league is not in free agency, and we kind of suspected that would be the case, that does not mean that you still don't have a need at that position. So they still have to go out and get a player or two in free agency. Maybe Drew Dolman becomes more of a priority. I know he said he wants to stay in Atlanta, but he's a center who kind of has the right age thing going, that you feel like you could grow with him and he could be there for a while. And that's one of the, do I think Mekhi Becton could be an option? I suppose, but I don't know that he would be. I heard a while ago that the Bears liked Will Fries. I think it's spelled like F-R-E-I-S, but it's pronounced Fries. And he is, I believe, 26, played for the Colts. I think he had an injury. That would be a guy. I mean, what are they going to do at center if they don't sign one in the free agent market? You draft a guy, and I don't know that he's immediately a starter. I don't know how quickly that position goes. It's like the league has changed a lot. And once upon a time, you weren't drafting centers very high. There were a lot of centers. In fact, it was the one position in the league where, generally speaking, you felt you could get a guy on the free agent market and he could be a starting center in the NFL, because a lot of those guys are really hardworking, try hard leader guys that are sometimes undersized, are sometimes just don't kind of match the kind of numbers you need, but it doesn't mean they can't play. So we've seen a lot of guys come into the league that way. But I would definitely think that they still, regardless of whether or not they can get Trey Smith, they need to fill those positions. So I'd say that you probably need to try to overpay a little to get the center and then get another guard. You still need to sign one. Obviously, it's not going to be for $20+ million a year.
I think this is a good thing. I know. Trey Smith, he's good. He's better than anybody the Bears currently have. That's not in question. But almost $25 million for an interior offensive lineman who does not touch the ball. I understand he protects the quarterback, but he does not touch the ball. He does not stop the quarterback. He could stop the quarterback if he can't block. But it's a lot of money. The question is this Atlanta center. I mean, because he's the guy, like he's there, and again, they've now kind of erased centers, left tackles, right tackle, right guard, left guard. It's what you pay offensive linemen. I would be amazed if the Bears ended up paying 18, even though they have the money, pay $18 million for this guy.
No?
You wouldn't pay, right? You don't want to pay that kind of money, do you?
I don't think he's going to earn that kind of money.
But I think he's, I just think because.
It's probably in the 15 range chart.
Right. I just think they could, this now your draft is back to you're definitely taking an offensive lineman at 10 instead of having that. That's what it today, because they could do something in free agency, obviously, but now maybe free agency instead of offensive line goes to defensive line and cornerback or defensive line and safety. And then that frees up areas of need on draft day with the offensive line. And maybe you get tricky and you move one of these, you move the left tackle into left guard, maybe.
Yeah, losing Trey Smith before you ever had him is disappointing, but it doesn't have to define your offseason.
Right.
It is one of those situations that it would have been great for them to be in the mix, and he certainly fit on their depth chart and in their locker room and on their payroll. But the Chiefs are smart to keep their best offensive linemen, and it was going to be a long shot that we talked ourselves into believing was possible because of a lot of things. Not the least of which, boy, his girlfriend is from Chicago and all the people is following on social media, but that is no longer possible. So you pivot and you make the best of the situation. Drew Dolman is probably the best of the situation. Making him a $15 million a year center sounds like a lot, but number one, you might get what you pay for. And secondly, you're in a position where you can't afford to overpay. If you are fixated on getting a guy that you believe is a top five center in the game, which I think he checks that box, is at the age where he's in your timeline for winning, which I think he checks that box, and represents a need, a huge need on an offensive line that's going to be revamped. And when you hear Ben Johnson in one of his 23 interviews this week in Indianapolis talk about the importance of the center position and wanting a veteran there, it makes you think that this is the way they're going to pivot. Mekhi Becton might be great, but there's an indication he's going to stay in Philly. Other guys might be, we don't know as much about, might be good depth pieces. Yeah, this is certainly was a disappointing thing, maybe not terribly surprising, but now the Bears can focus on a center. If they miss out on him as well, then you start to wonder, all right, are you going to focus more on the draft and go maybe a little bit differently in the approach? So this was something, the news you got to react to.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what Biggs thinks about the last question and more of our football questions. How about the White Sox finally winning a game in the Cactus League yesterday, but did it come at a cost? They lost outfielder Andrew Benintendi to a non-displaced fracture in the right hand after being hit on a pitch right in the beginning of the game and missed 4-6. Probably need some rehab assignment time. Benintendi is the highest paid member of the team at just over $17 million and one of the few recognizable names on this team.
Yeah, you don't want to overreact because he wasn't that productive, but at the same time, he was one of the few guys who came to camp and didn't necessarily need to introduce himself to Sox fans because they know who he is, like it or not. They know who he is because he's probably the highest paid free agent and a big disappointment, but he also finished the year strong and you were hoping that he would at least continue that momentum this season. That kind of injury is the one you hope doesn't linger because it could be the kind of thing that frames every disappointment that he has at the plate or the slow start or the long stretch of inconsistency. And just if he gets into a slump, you wonder if he can get out of it because hand injuries are tough. I don't like this for the White Sox. I wonder, I know they went out and signed Michael Taylor to a modest contract. I know they have Joey Gallo there as well. But I don't know if they could go out and get somebody else to play because they need bats. They need professional players. They need major leaguers up and down that lineup and in that clubhouse. And they lost one yesterday. Nobody's going to complain because Andrew Benintendi is known as an overpaid disappointment on the South Side. This doesn't change that. But the way he finished and what he was looking forward to with a fresh start this season makes this disappointing to me.
Think about what you just said that there, the overpaid disappointment, and $17 million highest paid guy on the team, and he's an overpaid. I'm not disagreeing with you, but just when you hear that, and we were just talking about a center for the Bears making probably more than $18 million in the free agency, you know, $17 million in free agency next year. It's bad, and when you're talking about that, it looked bad. Like, I grabbed my hand as I saw it happen, to be honest with you. And then you wonder, like, when he comes back, like, does he take a hair step back? Right. And then is he reaching, because he's a little bit, you know, it's in your head. Is he a little bit afraid of that inside pitch? Now he takes a step back. So now they work that outside corner. He can't get to it because he's a little bit away. And then, of course, the criticism and the disappointment continues on the south side.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, they can't afford to lose anyone is the reality of it. And the fact that this guy is going to miss 4 to 6 weeks with a non-displaced fracture. You know, you have so many bones in your hand, and there's so many things that can go awry, and it's really a dangerous place to get hit. And, you know, you don't know how that will impact his season. But I'm not sure how it'll impact the White Sox season either, to be honest with you. I'm not making light of it, but it's just one of these things. You know, it seems like he just kind of healed that hand, and now he's got a broken hand. You know, I guess whatever. It is just too bad that it happened. We wish no ill on any man, and we hope he gets back and has a good year. But, you know, I mean, he's the highest paid player, and it's just difficult to look at it and think that they're now going to fall apart, because they never really got going. I mean, maybe the greatest irony is that he was injured and then they won.
Can I ask you guys one question?
And here's the next pitch. This is hit in the air. It's hit well out into left center field, out by the wall, and that one is gone. So Tim Anderson's first hit this spring is a home run. And the Angels on the board early here in the first inning with a 1-0 lead.
Our thanks to the MLB Network for the use of that audio. You also heard Ron Coomer coming in. He'll be with you guys at 8. So, Tim Anderson got the first homer of his spring training against the Cubs, helping his chances of making the team. Who's more likely to start at shortstop for Angels Sox opening day? David Hall will be there at the rate. Anderson for the Angels or Montgomery for the Sox?
Yeah, it was too bad that Colson Montgomery was a scratch in that game because of back issues.
Uh-oh.
He got spasms in his back, and
Uh-oh.
So they scratched him from the game, and that's been a little bit of a boogeyman for him. I would probably, that might hesitate from my wagering on this, but I would think that Colson Montgomery is more likely to start at shortstop for the White Sox than Tim Anderson is to do so for the Angels. But we'll see. And it'll be interesting to see, because the Sox have other players to kind of cycle through. They got a lot of options. I didn't say good ones, but I don't know that they have determined that that Montgomery is going to be healthy enough or good enough to go.
Yeah, this is an interesting question. I don't root against Tim Anderson. I think things obviously didn't go the way anybody would have wanted here, so he's getting a new lease on things out in Anaheim, and if that's where he ends up, okay. But there, the Angels, Zach Nito is the starting shortstop, but he is out. And on the official depth chart, Tim Anderson is in. So I'm going to say it's more likely that Tim Anderson gets that start on opening day than Colson Montgomery.
I think I'm with you. I think I'm with you, because you talk about a guy who's almost played 1,000 games in the majors. I know he's fallen off the radar, and a lot of that is his own doing. Maybe this is a sign and a step in the right direction and a good sign for the rest of his career. I don't know how long the rest of Tim Anderson's career will last. But... He is claims to be starting over. He claims to be a new guy. We'll see. I think I'm more concerned, and what kind of makes you think is that you see Tim Anderson looking familiar, and you see Colson Montgomery, back spasms. Don't like that. Because it doesn't seem like it's the first time we've heard of back spasms associated with Colson Montgomery. And it just makes you a little bit concerned. He showed some good power over the weekend, homering off a lefty. He can go deep, and he's got he looks pretty fit. He looks strong, and he looks like an able-bodied young professional. But back spasms, not good for a shortstop. And he's got to win the job anyway. And if he doesn't, if he misses some time, whatever, you know there are more reasons to doubt him being in the lineup for me than there are maybe Tim Anderson winning a job that's already vacant because of an injury in Anaheim. So I think for right now, I would give Tim Anderson a slight nod starting on opening day, March 27th, with Mike Trout in town and the Anaheim Angels.
We'll see.
Pick six.
Any surprise that Nico Horner won't be making the trip to Japan with the Cubs? Horner had surgery on October 11th, and his rehab has progressed to a point where the Cubs' domestic opener on March the 27th is a more legit possibility.
We're excited about where Nico's at. I think it's all good. This is a good news situation. It's, you know, for Nico, it's not necessarily good news in that just he has to miss two games and has to miss the trip. But on the other side of it, it's good news because I think we were very much like tracking towards opening day, like domestic opening day, of him being in good shape, of him being ready for that and prepared for that.
So your reaction to Nico not taking the Big Bird over to Japan with his Cubs teammates?
I don't like it. I'm a little disappointed. I have to say, maybe even though it's not unexpected, and the fact that he has had this injury and it's nobody's surprise, really, but I don't really like it. And another thing I don't really like, I look at this March 18th game. I'm sorry as Molly starts to laugh, but I cringe a little bit when they say domestic opening day. And domestic opening day.
Right, right.
Look, does the season start on March 18th or not?
Sounds like it.
Does it? Really? Because they're leaving the second baseman at home. Yep. They're going to talk themselves out of taking Matt Shaw with them. And, okay, if these games don't matter, why are they counting? So if this is going to be treated like bring your cameras and smartphones and make sure we get all the is this a real regular season game or not? And I know that it's only two games. And Nico's fine, and he'll be fine. But if the trip doesn't matter, why does it matter? I'm working through this, obviously. So, yeah, I was disappointed because I want Nico in the lineup. I want him to play 160 games.
Yeah, I want Nico Horner in the lineup, too. And I bet Nico is disappointed that he's not going to be making the trip. And, listen, they all count. When you miss making Craig Tober by one game, you can look back. So they all matter and they all count. I mean, maybe not today, maybe in a different segment. Maybe this is pick six for Monday. You know, is your third base, second base combo, is it John Birdie and can John Birdie play both? We're expecting the guy to hit here. I mean, Nicky Lopez is going to, you know, is it going to go all the way to Gage Workman? Right,
Yes.
Then we heard yesterday.
Possibly.
Yesterday on the Score, okay, we heard the Cubs TV analyst say there's three or four or five better options than getting to Justin Turner to be your third baseman. And even though Justin Turner is listed as the backup third baseman, the first go, so this is not great news. Could there be worse news? Could he have had a setback? Of course, that would be worse news.
Right.
So all things considered. But, yeah, I mean, we could have, like, a domestic beer and play, like, a drinking game. Every time I hear domestic opener, I'll just take another drink of a Mick Ultra and, you know.
Here's the deal. You ask an excellent question. Is this opening day or not? I mean, you're breaking camp. And you're going to Japan, and you're going to play two games. Then you're coming back to camp, and then March 18th, you will really open the season, because then you will be in the season. So it's a great question. Now, here's the problem. Those games count. So the idea is to win. I get it. You're going over there. You're going to play a couple exhibitions and two games and 162. What does it matter? Let me tell you something. If you were living on the South Side, you know, one more win and you wouldn't be shamed as the worst team in history. So, yeah, a game matters. And I hope it doesn't matter this season, because this is kind of a joke. Half your infield's not going to be with you. Half the team, half the infield of the team that you plan on lining up and playing isn't even going to get on the plane. That's not good. That is not good. It's not ideal. I think they'll have cover and they'll do fine, and it won't be the end of the world. But it's hardly ideal. Let's put it that way.
I agree.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
All right, here we go. Bulls question.
Bulls.
Will the Bulls beat the Raptors tonight? And is Josh Giddey a potential double-double all-star on a good team or a stat stuffer destined to be the best player on a bad team?
Boy, the guy's getting better. Let's go after him. Yeah.
Doesn't it feel that way, though?
Yeah. Well, it feels like he's a stat stuffer. It feels like they had to get rid of Zach so there'd be some room for him to play, and he's the guy that stepped into the abyss and has played better because there's no one else to dominate the ball, and he's able to do that. Yeah, I don't think I think that he has a contract. I think he's playing for the contract. As I've said several times, I'm now comfortable giving him another contract, but I was wondering about that earlier in the year. But I think if they're building a team around him, they're not going to be going anywhere. And I know that's kind of harsh, but maybe he can develop and get better. He's still pretty young. What is he, 23? Is that what we decided? So there's time, but I don't know how. I mean, I would not break the bank, and I wouldn't give him $30 million a year. You'd have to convince me to make it to 20. I think he's like a 17 rather than a $22 million guy.
Aussie, I. Listen, he's a good player on a bad team. That's what he is right now. He's a good player on a bad team. I think he'd be a player on a good team, because his problem as a ball handler is he turns the ball over too much. And we keep hearing Billy Donovan, as much as he wants to prop him up, always falling back to, it'd be great, I'd really like this, but we got to stop turning the ball over. And then you go to the box score, and who turns the ball over the most? Josh Giddey. Interesting that the Bulls are actually favored tonight. -1.5, totals 235 per our friends over at Circus Sports Illinois. We'll hear Chuck and Bill at 6:45. And it's always a big game when Chuck gets to call the game for the Raptors, his old team. He spent over a decade up in Toronto.
It has struck me as noticeable that Josh Giddey has really come on. And, yep, you know, today's the last day in February, and I think he's shot over 50% from three-point range in this month. And he's been a guy that has four double-doubles with 20 or more points, and he has a little niche in Bulls history there. And yet, I don't think that the Josh Giddey respect has been there. And maybe that's appropriate because he doesn't protect the basketball, doesn't play that much defense, but he is also pretty young. He seems like he's been in the NBA forever.
He's 22. He turns 23 in October.
He's 22 years old, and I do wonder if the Bulls have something here. I'm not saying pay him $30 million a year. We had a conversation with Casey Johnson about what he would be worth, and probably north of 20 but less than 25, and somewhere between that might be, based on the NBA marketplace, not a bad investment for a player that could be ascending. If he can play a little bit more serviceable, acceptable defense and get better at protecting the basketball, you might have something here. I don't know if he can be the best player on a playoff team, but he certainly could be a complement. He could be a number two. He could be a third option because he does see the floor well. He has improved his shooting. And I feel better about Josh Giddey at this stage of the season than I thought I would when they brought him here last summer.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
With our guest, Illinois head coach Brad Underwood, 825. How many Big Ten teams look worthy of March Madness? And what's been the most interesting element this season in that league?
Strange year. I don't really see a dominant Big Ten team. There's no Purdue of last year in the Big Ten right now. There's no team that you look at and say they could make the Final Four if this player continues to play at that level. I'm not quite sure. I think that which team I would trust the most, I think there's going to be probably six or seven. Does that sound like it's too many? Probably six or seven-ish. I've paid attention to the Big Ten basketball a little bit more lately. Curious what's going on in Indiana because Mike Woodson is out and curious what's next for them. Purdue, Matt Painter making some noise without Edie this year, kind of interesting. But to me, Dusty May has done a terrific job at Michigan. He'll be the probably coach of the year. Maybe they'll get somebody else in there to maybe unseat him. I don't know. Michigan State, they had the buzzer beater this week. They've got the big victory in Maryland. Tom Izzo made history. Does he have one last run in him? And if he does get to the Final Four, if he can somehow win a title, I don't know if they could do that. But does he walk away? So I think Michigan State right now, to me, is the most interesting element of the Big Ten schedule.
Well, they're the highest-ranked team, and right now Big Ten's got five in the top 25. Maryland may slip, beat at the buzzer last night by Michigan, who the Illini have next. That's a huge game. The Illini and the Wolverines is an absolute must-watch game Sunday afternoon. So I'm looking forward to hearing what Coach Underwood has to say about that one. But, you know, the other day, after the loss to Duke, certain websites had the Illini as a team that needs to do something. So they had that 20-point win against Iowa, but Iowa's, you know, 6-11 in the conference. So that's not necessarily a great win. So this game coming up against Michigan is huge.
Yeah, I think one of the questions you should ask yourself is how many teams from one conference do you want in the NCAA tournament, right? And I think that you got to look at history and how they've done and how many teams have bowed out early, etc. I think 7 or 8 sounds about right. Not much more than that. But, like, you know, the problem you have is that there are not 14 SEC teams you can't just say that two conferences should fill up the NCAAs. It's just not the way the tournament is built. So I think there needs to be limits to how many teams get in. I get it. The super conferences are developing, but it's a little bit different in basketball. There's still the element of one team on one night. There can be all sorts of wild upsets. What's interesting to me about the Big Ten is, like, in the last week, how many last-second length of the court
it's
shots
crazy.
Are going to win games.
It's, gone, you know, it's awesome.
Michigan State, Michigan. Yeah. I mean, it's just been fantastic. So, I think that when I look at Illinois, to me they're seventh in the Big Ten. They're kind of on the bubble, and I get it. They've had flu go through the team, and they've been missing people, and it's just the wrong time of year to have that happen. But you know, definitely Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Purdue, Maryland's got a good team.
They do.
Do you like UCLA? See, it's the expanded Big Ten. So I think that there are a lot of teams that can make a
case.
Can
we keep Mick Cronin out just on principle?
And a lot of them are all kind of bottled up. You don't like him on principle?
He's kind of a grumpy guy.
Well, so what? Who is? Like, dude, have you heard Dustin tell you how he met Dr. J? You got to find out about that story.